Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sports Community Radio, the show that is all about grassroots sports. Welcome to you, my friend, Steve Pallas.
Good morning, Joe. How are you travelling?
I'm going very, very well, mate. We have got an absolute bumper of a show this week, as we do nearly every week as the audience is discovering us out there. We have got Kevin Milstein, the founder and director of the Reagan Milstein Foundation, on the show. And he is an example of how just one man can change the lives of many using sport as a vehicle. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And we're also going to be discussing, as part of our ever popular top nine segment, the top nine tips for making photo content work for your club. And before we get into all of that, or any of that, I should say, we're going to start, as per usual, with the latest grants that have come out during the week, Steve.
Yeah, there's a few grants, Joe, but just before we touch on the grants, geez, it's been a big week, hasn't it?
Huge.
We've had the honour and the pleasure of being in the Northern Territory for a week, and I look forward, we met some amazing people and heard some amazing stories. So look forward to, in the coming weeks, bringing some of those people and stories to the show. And,
absolutely.
And there's a lot that we can learn from the way that local sport is run in the territory. But today, Joe, there's a few grants, a couple of grants and some different ones that are, I think we've got about 64 grants open on the, we've got 64 grants that we've found relating to local sports clubs on the Sports Community website, which is www.sportscommunity.com.au. And then just click on the grants tab and you'll see all the grants from all around the country. The four that have opened this week, Joe, there's two from South Australia. One is called the Club One Small Grants. So this is for grants up to $500, which is pretty cool because you don't really need to go to a lot of time and effort to put together that grant application. But grants up to $500 to assist in small projects and activities. So typical grant allocations would go to first aid equipment and uniforms and very minor capital works. So practical and useful piece of funding, which really every club should apply for, because it doesn't take much in South Australia. It doesn't take much time to apply for, and everyone can do with a $500 more in there. Their skyrocket, Joe. The second South Australian grant is certainly of a lot more magnitude. It's the Clubs SA / IGC Sponsorship Assistance Program. So IGC in South Australia is the Independent Gaming Corporation. So funneling some of the funds that we make in South Australia or that are made in South Australia from gambling and funneling them back to local sports. So clubs are able to apply to Club South Australia for very significant sponsorship packages and proposals, and certainly over the years, over $2 million worth of funds have been directed back to South Australian sports clubs. And so organisations such as, it's not just sports that can apply for this grant, but from a sports perspective, We've seen organisations like the Victor Harbour Triathlon receive $9,000. Inman Valley Tennis Club has received $18,000 to undertake resurfacing. It's a fantastic grant to really tackle some of those larger projects, and fantastic way of generating some large funds for your club. So if you're a South Australian club, Joe, then those two grants are very well worthwhile applying for. Now, another grant that's just opened is one very close to your heart, Joe, from the Reagan Milstein Foundation.
Do you want to absolutely, Steve, and timely as well, given that we've got the founder and director, Kevin Milstein, on the program later on. The foundation basically collects pre-loved gear, that's football gear, whether it be boots, shin pads, full team strips, that kind of stuff, and it collects them and then distributes it to disadvantaged youth around Victoria, Australia, and even around the South Pacific and Southeast Asia. So it also, as part of its charter, provides opportunities for talented athletes to join programs that they may not be able to afford. So the foundation has a $5,000 grant available for those folks out there that have talented kids that may not be able to afford them playing at the football club of their choice. So go to the foundation's website, www.reaganmilsteinfoundation.com, and you can find more details on the grant there, including application papers as well.
Fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to listening to Kevin. I have listened to him before, and he's very inspirational, Joe. So stay tuned for that one. Final grant for today is for Victorian. This one's a little bit more aimed at the elite athletes with the VIS Individual Athlete Scholarship. So applications for individual athlete scholarships are invited for Victorian athletes with outstanding performance records at national or international level, but are not currently part of the VIS Tier 1 program. So those applications close on April the 17th. So if you're an athlete that has good, outstanding performance at national and international level, then certainly apply to the VIS for this grant. So, Joe, like every week we say, if you're looking for money, looking for grants for anything, whether it be facilities, for travel, for uniforms, for development programs, anything, there are generally grants open, and the best place to find those grants are at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and then hit the grants tab, Joe.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio. If you've missed the show this week, then visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au and download the podcast from our website. And while you're there, check out all the latest in grants and fundraising tips from the number one grassroots sports website in the country, sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, welcome back. I've got the great pleasure of speaking to a man, actually, who has single-handedly changed the face of giving, football giving, and giving in terms of soccer, that is, in Australia. And his name is Kevin Milstein. He's the founder and director of the Reagan Milstein Foundation. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you, Joe, and great being on the show.
Kevin, I just wonder if you can take a few moments just to tell us what the Reagan Milstein Foundation is all about and how it came to pass.
Yes, look, 4 years ago, during the South African World Cup, I took my youngest son, Reagan, to the World Cup with my partner, Debbie. And on the way back, we stopped off in Malaysia just to do a couple of days diving. Unfortunately, Reagan had an accident, and he was in critical condition, intensive care for about 3 weeks. He was actually medevaced to Singapore. And then after about 2.5 to 3 weeks in Singapore, he was then medevaced to Melbourne. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple of days later. When we were sitting around as a family, because the family flew into Singapore to basically to, you know, watch vigil over Reagan and hope and pray and all the things you would do, I basically sat there and I thought, what was this all about? What was his 14 years all about? If he just disappears, then what was the point of it all? It was at that point that I was... I had the idea of starting up a foundation, and particularly with the two things that he loved most, and that was football or soccer and helping people. So unfortunately, when he did pass away, it was some weeks later I contacted Football Federation Victoria, who I'd already been working with anyway at a grassroots level, and discussed setting up a foundation in his name, and they were completely behind it. And what it's grown into is something much bigger than I ever would have expected. We've had at least $250,000 worth of pre-loved football gear given to us. That's old boots, uniforms, sometimes it's sample garments or boots, all sorts of different football equipment, which we've sent across the South Pacific, Southeast Asia, and, of course, around Australia. We've been able to financially help some talented kids in Australia, as well as help get some kids in, get their registration paid to get into clubs in Melbourne. We've worked with asylum seekers, with different clubs around the place. Anglicare is another group that we work with. They also deal with refugee kids as well. And I guess one of the highlights was that last year when Liverpool came out for that, you know, very famous game in front of 95,000 people at the MCG, Liverpool invited us to be their charity partner in Australia, which was a huge thrill. Probably somewhat, I wouldn't say disappointing, but I think Reagan would have been happier if it was Chelsea coming along and offering it. But you know, you really could not back, you know, a powerhouse like Liverpool, you know, working with them.
Kevin, sorry, I just want to, because your story is absolutely mind-bogglingly amazing to me, and just a real testimony to how one person can change the lives of many. And I have to confess to the listeners that I do know you personally. I've worked for you as well. And I know that you're by nature quite an unassuming and modest fella, but what you've just recounted is astounding, to say the least. That really, if I could just tell the listeners how you collect your gear and where you store it. I think that's something that needs to be told. So walk us through how you collect it and where you store it.
People think that we've got a massive warehouse somewhere in the outer suburbs of Melbourne with all sorts of forklifts going around, but it's not the case at all. Look, you know, when the foundation started, we basically put out word that this is what we were going to do. We were going to collect pre-loved and unused football gear, and we started getting calls from, you know, companies and also from football clubs around the area that did their own collections, and eventually I got on to Visi, where they donated a number of wheelie bins, which I personally have taken around to the clubs, put it in the back of my car and dropped off a wheelie bin at a club. They'll call me back and say, look, it's full, would you come and get it? We'll either swap it or just take it away for that season. And then it all gets stored in my garage. And funnily enough, you think that all this gear that comes in, how could you fit it in the garage? Well, the funny thing is it actually goes out pretty much as quickly as it comes in. So there's a fairly good flow of goods that go in and out. And in it can either be like 40 boxes at a time of gear that might have gone to Tonga, or it could be just simply one sports bag that somebody's is going to Vietnam on a holiday and they want to take some gift to the kids over there. So we'll put a number of shirts and a few balls in a sports bag and off they go.
So one man who has a garage where he warehouses this pre-loved football equipment that he collects in the back of his car. And I'm basically just rephrasing what you've told us, and this is why it's such an amazing story. Your reach is as far as Vietnam and South Pacific Islands. Tell us a bit more about those places that you go to. So I know Cambodia is another one, and this is just amazing to me. So what have you done in Tonga, and what have you done in Vietnam and Cambodia?
Well, in the South Pacific Islands, we've worked together with the football federations over there. We've been very fortunate that it's a bit of a funny story, but the government of Israel in the past has helped a lot of the South Pacific nations with medical gear, and they came to us and said, would you help with sports gear? And we said, sure, why not? So we put it all together, and basically the Israeli government pays for the shipment of the goods to go over to these islands. But Tonga's a prime example. They were the first place we went to, and it was actually done two subsequent deliveries to them. And they claim that we've kind of resurrected football in their tiny kingdom. In their words, they say that we've sent them probably about $180,000 worth of gear. It's probably not far off the mark if you look at replacement value of some of this gear. And if you go onto our Facebook page or even the Instagram account, that sort of thing, that you'll actually see these teams. You might see a Victory team running around in Tonga, or you might see a Altona team running around in Samoa, or like a Glenira team running around in Vanuatu or somewhere
but
like
it's,
that.
It's not just it's really that. It's, yeah, it's not just the actual the equipment that you're sending over there, but you're also helping these kids get back into sport, especially in in island nations that have a chronic history of diabetes. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we're able to help them afford getting into sport, so that they don't need to go out and buy uniforms. So obviously the uniforms that they donated by us, they'll be using this year, get recycled to the next team next year, etc. In the case, like I was saying, in Tonga is a prime example, that they've actually even named a team. They've named the Reagan Milstein under 14 team.
That's amazing.
And there's also, I think, a club, Reagan Milstein Football Club in Tonga. So that's how much of an impact we've made in that state.
And the king, because Tonga is a kingdom, the king actually gave you that feedback on the ability to get the young people of the kingdom back into sport. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's wow. Right. Yeah, when it comes into like Southeast Asia, our reach has been, I would say, just as far, but not as great. Only in as much that we don't have someone that's paying for the freight of things to go over there, so we rely on people contacting us. It could be a school group, it could be a TAFE working group going over to Cambodia, it could be a tourist going to Singapore, anything like that. They'll contact us and we'll put together a bag or two or five or whatever they allowed to carry with them, just to take with them to one of the Southeast Asian countries and drop it off. It's their choice. Either someone can come to the hotel and just pick up the bag, or they can go out to the centre where the goods are being donated and see for themselves. I also have to say that we're fortunate enough I'm fortunate enough that I'll be going to Brazil in 3 months' time, and we're doing a similar thing. We're actually taking a bag of goods with us to Brazil, but we're going via South Africa, so we're taking a bag of goods with us to South Africa too. So it'll be reaching in even, you know, further than we've done before. But we invite people to contact us anytime, you know, via email. If somebody's going somewhere, if we can put something together for them, we'll do it for them.
Wow. Kevin, Stephen here. You touched.
Oh, hi, Steve.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You touched earlier on your work with asylum seekers. This is now this being working with asylum seekers is now a challenge that clubs are facing as different nationalities move into their communities. So, what have you learned with your work with asylum seekers and what? If you were advising clubs on how to approach different groups and to engage them in their club activities, how would you recommend that a club go about doing that when they've kind of had no previous experience with people that are new to Australia?
Well, a lot of these groups, if it's Afghani, Sudanese, Somali, whatever, they already have community members that contact clubs on their behalf and try and liaise with clubs on their behalf. And I would strongly recommend that if a new asylum seeker came along to a club, that the club get in contact with their community group.
Yes.
Now, it could be a government group, it could be just their local community, because there is obviously, look, it's, you know, Australia is a land of migrants, and obviously it's just different waves and different decades, whichever decade you happen to be in. And obviously there's the cultural differences and there's language barriers, etc. But as I've discovered, no secret, you take anyone, any colour, any race, religion, language, age, gender, take two people, put them on the ground, put a ball between them. You don't need more than that.
Yep.
You really don't need more than that. And what, you know, once they start playing, well, great. I mean, the problem that we find is that it'll be the registration fees, which will be a hindrance to some of these asylum seekers. Well, you know, we offer support in that regard as well. And also, I do know that there's government support to be able to pay for some registration fees as well. I just recently dropped off two boxes of boots and to Anglicare, and I also had two bags of used uniforms from, goodness, it's even before the FFE times. It's the old Victorian Soccer Federation or something like that, which somebody dug out of their garage, and they contacted me and they said, look, you know, two teams of gear here, like, you know, shirt, shorts, socks even unused socks. Wow. So I dropped them off at Anglicare, and they'll basically use that to set up their teams, you know, to help them integrate. But and that's a perfect example too. I mean, using football to integrate these immigrants into our society, and you can't use anything better than football. It's just the perfect way to break down barriers with people.
Absolutely. So, you mentioned Anglicare, and is that how you'd recommend clubs also as another avenue to linking in with different community groups, is to use the community support services that are out there?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there are government support services as well. There's asylum seekers. There's Anglicare. They're the ones that I've worked with, but I'm sure there would be a couple of others out there. But for sure, if you've got, you know, like a group of recent refugees and migrants coming along, they would certainly get in contact with the people that are supporting them, which I'm sure they're doing anyway. They would be coming out with some sort of a mentor, someone that would be coming out to the clubs and saying, hey, look, can you accommodate these six kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess working with the third parties, they have an intimate knowledge of, I guess, the cultural differences and different customs that each group would use. So that helps navigate those differences between the two groups in the early stages as well, I'm assuming.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Kevin, Liverpool, that's an amazing story, absolutely amazing story. Liverpool is one of the top 10 brands when it comes to football across the world. Absolutely a giant of sport, and here you are, one man in a garage who's been able to attract them as an official partner. So how did you do it, mate?
I've got no bloody idea, to tell you the truth. It kind of came about when Liverpool came out to Melbourne. There's some friends of mine that were running a private, let's say like a footstool centre, and they were friends with the Fox Sports commentator in England, Daniel Garve, and they contacted him and asked him, what's the chances of getting Liverpool to come to our centre to promote the centre? I mean, you can imagine, you know, Liverpool's coming out. Every man with a fish and chip shop wants to have Liverpool standing in front of their fish and chip shop taking photos. So he contacted Liverpool. They said the only chance we do something like that is if you've got a charity involved. Between Daniel and my friends, they said, well, why don't we recommend the Reagan Milstein Foundation? And they did, and Liverpool said, yep, sounds good to us. I knew nothing about it, nothing whatsoever. All I knew is I got a phone call from one of my friends saying, oh, look, we want to talk to you about setting up a fundraising activity with Liverpool. Beg your pardon?
Liverpool, Sydney, you must have been thinking.
With you guys. I thought, are you serious? okay, so I went into the discussions, and yes, we did set up a sort of fundraising evening, but just a few days before all of that happened, I get this email from Liverpool, which I carry around with me to all my meetings, as you probably already know, Joe, with an invitation from Liverpool to be their charity partner in Australia for the 2013-14 season. Well, it doesn't take you too long to think about it. Okay. The truth actually is I kind of read it and thought, no, that can't be. And we were on our way out for dinner, and I kind of had to shake my head and said, no. I'll go out for dinner, have a couple of drinks, I'll come back and look at it again. That's exactly what I did. I said to Debbie, would you have a look at this? What do you think about this?
You didn't change after you had a few drinks then?
No, it didn't change, no. And actually, it wasn't until the morning where I actually sat down and wrote something back to them to obviously accept the invitation, just because I just couldn't believe it. It was just so far beyond what we'd ever dreamt of for Reagan and his foundation. It was just so out of the realm that, yeah, it took me a good few hours to let it sink in. But, yeah, look, I have to say that not really having followed Liverpool, we are really, I guess, Chelsea fans. I guess this is going out over public radio. So
Joe's standing on his seat at the moment.
We were Chelsea fans, my kids much more so than I am. But still, I have to say, Liverpool have been amazing. They are really impressive to work with. They've been very supportive. Look, you know, you wish you could have Gerrard and Suarez, you know, standing in front of the house, you know, twice a week or something, so you can get invite people, you know, to come and be part of the foundation. But look, they've really been supportive. They've been amazing. At the end of the season, we're expecting to get some of the players' kit that we're able to auction off for fundraising. They've been really amazing to work with, and I hope that we've ticked all the right boxes with them and that we can roll it over for the next year.
I'm sure you have, and it's thoroughly deserved. Amazing, brilliant story, and an absolute incredible story in Australian sport, I think, to be for an organisation like yourself to be able to attract Liverpool Football Club. Now, on to more domestic matters.
Yep.
Just so the folks out there know that you're a massive, massive supporter of the local football scene. Yep. You've been a Melbourne Victory member for a long, long time. You're also the president of North Caulfield Soccer Club, Football Club.
Yep. Yep.
You've been an administrator in football for many, many years, including the Southeast Cougars as well. Now, you also have a program that you run in partnership with the Melbourne Heart, just to cover all bases, which you do so well. Tell us about that, the Girls with Heart program.
Yeah, when the foundation started and we were looking at different projects and Victory at the time, Victory at the time, obviously the big guys on the block, they were a little bit difficult to talk to. We couldn't really sort out a project with them, but then Heart started up and then we started to talk to them and we thought, well, you know, what can we do to make a difference, to really make an impact to somebody or to a group of, footballers, young footballers, and, because there's already a lot of boys' sport out there and there was some mixed in with, new refugees, new communities against, maybe some of the current communities, etc. So between the Hearts and the FFE and ourselves, we sat down and we thought, well, hang on, what about girls? Nobody does anything for girls. So we sat down and nutted out this idea that we would do three training sessions a year for girls around Melbourne and different places around Melbourne. And then once a year, we would have a exhibition game, a curtain raiser before a Melbourne Heart game. That started 3 years ago. We just, a couple of weeks ago, we completed our third annual Girls with Heart game at Amy Park as a curtain raiser before the A-League game. And it's now become part of Melbourne Heart's Harmony Day display. So they attract girls from around Melbourne, and it's magnificent to see. It really is. It's we would like to get, how can I say this? We would like to get more obvious different ethnicities mixed in to the girls. It is difficult, working with some different migrant groups. But as it is, look, the girls that we had just a couple of weeks ago, talking to their dads and their mums just before the game, I mean, these girls that were chosen to play at Amy Park, they couldn't sleep the night before. They were absolutely thrilled. And we would hope that it would encourage them in their football careers, that they would take it further and hopefully become kind of ambassadors for the program and pass it on to the girls that are just a year under them for next year.
Mm. And you also have run a few crowdfunding campaigns. Crowdfunding is a very interesting and important part of what we do here at Sports Community, encouraging the sports clubs, not just football, obviously, but all different types of sports clubs to raise funds. And one of the ways that we advocate doing that is crowdfunding. And you've run a couple of successful ones. Your latest one is to send some fellas, young men from the Wangaratta Specialist School to represent Victoria in the Special Olympics in Melbourne in October. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. And it is true. We have run one other crowdfunding campaign in which we've been able to fund three Cambodian boys from the orphanage that we work with in Cambodia to this Homeless World Cup in Chile at the end of the year, which you know, obviously everyone's thrilled about. This next crowdfunding campaign comes about because there's a magnificent guy, Jack McNeely. I hope he's listening to this, but he works at the Wangaratta Special School, Special Needs School, and he runs their soccer program. And they've been running a team in selected leagues for a few years, really, because it's been Jack right behind it all the way. And again, it's even though the kids do have special needs, it's just quite simple, you know, put a ball on the ground and let them play, sort of thing. And they play, I think it's seven aside, nine aside. They certainly don't play the full 11 aside game. And yes, there is an Olympics, Special Olympics, occurring in October in Melbourne. And Jack came to us and said, "There's three boys that he wants to get into the team, and they can't afford anything, quite frankly. We've agreed to pay for their deposits to get into the game, to be part of the team, the Victorian team. And now we've started up a crowdfunding campaign to pay the rest of it, which you can find on our website. But we really hope that the public gets behind it. And I know Jack's going to start pushing it out amongst the Wangaratta community to try and get them behind it as well. And hopefully we can get these three boys to the Special Olympics."
So part of the reason you're successful at fundraising is the way that you use your media assets, and especially your social media assets. Your website is www.reaganmilsteinfoundation.com. You're on Twitter, and you're also on Facebook. Just give me an idea of how many times you would post on those things over a week. Or a day, like a day.
Well, as often as possible. Let's put it that way. If there's anything happening in the foundation, it'll go up on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. The website's more for full stories, but definitely as often as possible. So it's possible that it could be three or four times a day. It's possible that it might only be once in a week.
And you run your own newsletter as well. Yeah,
yes.
So I guess the point I'm making for the listeners out there is that your success is not through luck. It's through damn hard work and also very, very good use of the social media and website and newsletter and these kind of assets that you have. Is there any other tips for organisations out there that are looking to raise funds that you might have for them?
You know what? You have to kind of put your business hat on with this. And a few years ago, I had a business partner. Unfortunately, he did pass away. And it was a saying that we used to say all the time: the more you tell, the more you sell. It's as simple as that. The more you tell, the more you sell. I mean, people aren't going to jump on your bandwagon if they don't know anything about you or what you're doing. So you really do have to get out there and try and sell your message. I'm not so much involved with the let's say like community funding, like government funding, grants and all that sort of stuff. I'm not so much involved with that, so I really don't have a big insight into that, apart from the fact that you've got to, in your community, in your municipality, in your council, you've got to be constantly looking out for whatever grants are coming up. But apart from that, it's quite simply, you've got, you know, it really is, the more you tell, the more you sell. I mean, you've got to show people out there that you're genuine about your product and you're really passionate about what you do, and people do take that on board and they will support you.
Kevin, I'd love to talk to you all day. In fact, I probably pretty much do. But I just want a final comment from you, putting your president's hat on, your sporting president's hat on. What do you think the motivation should be for parents putting their kids into a sports club?
Well, really have fun. Just go out there and have fun. Don't take it too seriously. I really think, and it's my personal point of view, you know, being part of a team is a great experience for young children to learn how to work with other people, how to deal with other people, how to deal with success and how to deal with failure at the same time. I wouldn't, you know, as far as parents are concerned, don't put too high expectations on your children. I will say I'm a parent of five children. There's Reagan was the youngest, and I've got four other children. And I used to have this rule at home, which sometimes people slap me on the wrist for, one child, one sport. I mean, just take a child and let them play it, let them enjoy it. Don't crowd their lives too much with too many activities. Let them be children. If they don't enjoy a particular sport, by all means, change it. Absolutely.
Kevin,
Can I just say one last thing?
Absolutely,
About the foundation. I know a lot of the, you know, when we're talking about the foundation, it's a lot about what I do and all this kind of stuff. And yes, I do run most of it. From a very, very personal point of view, it's it provides me with a lot of solace, if that's the word I can use, to see how many smiles we can provide through football, and Reagan's just behind all those smiles.
Absolutely. And just to finish off the interview, it's an honour to know you, an honour to have you as a friend, and I think what you've done is absolutely amazing. So thanks so much for coming on to the Sports Community Radio Show, and we look forward to hearing more about the magnificent, magnificent achievements of the Reagan Milstein Foundation in years to come. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Joe and Steve.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au.
Dreaming of a place which is abundant with fresh fruits, herbs and vegetables, cheeses, seafood, bread, cakes and many other regional delicacies? Well, stop dreaming, as the Farmers Market in Mornington has all that and a whole lot more. Enjoy freshly made coffee and ready-to-eat food in an environment which the kids will love. Open every second Saturday of every month from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. $2 per adult. Children are free. The Farmers Market Mornington, a station sponsor. Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre has two centrally located clinics in Mornington and now in Frankston. They not only have state-of-the-art facilities, but also a great team of specialists with great skill in surgical technique and non-invasive skin cancer treatment. See for yourself on their open day, 15th of March, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at their new centre, 375 Nepean Highway, Frankston. Inquiries call 5975 9544. The Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre's a station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. From juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
Are you a business owner looking to cut costs in your business? Tough, isn't it? Let Bartercard show you a different way to increase your sales, cash flow and business profits. Don't wait. Increase your cash flow today. Boost your business with Bartercard. To find out how Bartercard can increase cash flow to your business, call 1300-BARTER. That's 1300-BARTER.
This is Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing knowledge, passion and enjoyment around food. We run cooking classes for kids, teens and adults, present food events and cooking demonstrations, create recipes to highlight your product and style food for the camera. Join me every Tuesday morning on The Breakfast Program when I chat about all things food on the peninsula. To find out more, visit me at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au and like my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet with Sweet Pea Cuisine, a station sponsor.
Okay, as alluded to earlier in the show, we're going to be talking top nine tips for making photos work at your club, Steve.
Yeah, the top nine sections, Joe, have certainly caused a lot of discussion and
debate
and getting people thinking about how to do things within their club. So we thought we'd tackle a little bit lighthearted, it seems on the surface, which is making photos work for your club. But before we get into the top nine, Joe, I know that you're passionate about clubs using photos. So tell us about that first.
Absolutely. And look, photos, when we're talking content, most people think about articles, they think about written content. One of the things that engages or potentially has the power to engage your club's members and potential audience is graphical or pictorial content. So we're talking photos. And research has shown that up to 5 billion photos get exchanged in the course of a day over all the different photo sharing and photo apps and photo tools. So your Facebooks, your Instagrams, your Tumblrs, your Picassas, your photo buckets, those kind of tools. So, and this is at exponential growth rate. So it's increasing every day, every month, every year. Photos are becoming more and more popular as a way to exchange and engage. So that's the backdrop for why we want to talk about photos with you, because photographic content represents a major opportunity for your club to attract a new audience or to engage and retain your current membership. And that's why we want to give you our top tips on how to use photos at your club.
Well, you know what they say, Joe?
A picture
tells a thousand words.
Absolutely.
So making photos work for your club, and I think you kind of illustrated so well why photos are so powerful, because they're exchanged at such a rapid rate. They're a great storytelling. So if we want clubs to incorporate photos into the way that they communicate with their members, the first thing they've got to do, Joe, tip number one, is to nominate people to take photos. And I guess in my thinking, I was looking at it from a more formal process about, you know, the club will nominate some photographers who will then provide the photos back to the club, who will use them on their different ways. But you, when we were talking about this in the office, you were coming at it from a completely different way and saying, really, everybody's a photographer these days.
Absolutely. Everybody's a photographer, and everybody has the capability of adding to a club's photographic database. So most of the kids these days, they know how to use social media tools such as Instagram, Snapchat, all these different tools that allow them, Facebook, allow them to take pictures and quickly exchange them. So all you need to do as a club is make it part of your communications that everybody out there on match day or around the club should take photos and then upload them to your webmaster or to whoever's looking after your social media. And the good ones could then be published in your social media tools and on your website as well. Now, that being said, you also have to wrap some constraints around that. Obviously, there's some legal issues that your club will need to work through to make sure that nobody gets offended or nothing illegal or unsavory is occurring with taking photos. But in most cases, Yeah, match day photos can be taken from club members who are watching the game, uploaded to your website or your social media, published right there and then, and that's a great way of engaging your audience.
Okay, so tip number one, Joe, is get people taking photos. That's the first thing.
Yep.
Step number two, or tip number two, and I guess this is more setting it up, is that, as you said, if everyone in your club is taking photos and sending photos to the club, your website, you just can't put all those photos on the website, but you don't want to lose them. And having photos sit on your webmaster's computer or this person's computer or that person's computer, over time you're going to lose those photos. So we really strongly recommend to clubs that they set up a photo archive. And there's lots and lots of different websites out there. Many are for free and some are for incidental amounts like $5 or $10 a month or $20 a year, where clubs can store their photos year on year, and build up this massive photo library. That imagine you have a photo library for every photo that was taken within your club for the last 50 years.
Absolutely. And how many times as a club do you have to produce a newsletter or something along those lines and start scratching your head over what we're going to use?
Wish I had that photo.
Yeah, wish I had that photo.
Yeah.
Or then have to go and pay someone to produce the photo. Yeah. So if you have a library of photos, you can use them. You've got an endless supply of content that you can use in your club communications.
And if you put them on a website, like Flickr or Picasa or Photo Bucket or Fanfare, some of the bigger ones, Joe, then you're never going to lose them. And all that needs to happen that needs to change year on year on year is that the password for that website is handed down from one webmaster to the next. And then that new webmaster has got access to hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, and over time, hundreds of thousands of photos. So create that photo repository. Don't let that be someone's computer is our tip number three, Joe.
Number two. And tip number three, Steve?
Tip number three. It will start with the central repository of information for a club. Make sure that you've got lots of photos on your website, because people, Joe, I don't care how old you are, who you are, everyone loves to see themselves in a photo. So if you've got photos up on your website, that will drive traffic to your website, particularly if you're consistently putting photos up. If you put photos up every now and then, people aren't going to look for them. But if they know by 5 o'clock after the game, photos are going to be up on the website, you'll have a constant stream of traffic week in, week out, looking at those photos. And it just makes it a lot more personable, your site, your website, absolutely, and your club.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I touched on how you might manage this from a legal point of view. A lot of the clubs out there, what they do is they have, as part of their registration process, a disclaimer or some kind of authority box that allows authority for the club to have photos produced to promote the club. And, you know, you can write it in any way that you want, to include club members taking photos on match days, which will be used on websites. But that's the way you do it. That's how you get authorization to use the photo, so you don't have to, you know, worry about that as slowing you down when you're putting photos on your newsletters and things like that.
Cool. Well, we'll come to newsletters, Joe. So tip number three, use photos on your website. Tip number four, Joe.
Social media,
Facebook, Twitter.
Absolutely. And this is a very important place to use your photographic content, because of what Steve mentioned before, in that the ability of photos to be exchanged so quickly. So photos basically are one of the most likely pieces of content that are going to go viral. In other words, they're going to amplify through your club's social media networks by people sharing them from one network to another. So having photos on your social media just means that your social media messages and your social media brand is going to extend a lot further than if you would just have written content on there.
Now, Joe, a little bit of just to drill into one thing a little bit of social media lingo, and you're our resident social media expert. Memes. What are memes, Joe? And how do photos
contribute to memes.
Okay, well, memes are, I think, is a Greek word, but it's basically about the exchange of an idea. So memes, what memes are, and they started in the last 5 years or so to gain popularity, is basically it's a photo with some written content on there to quickly convey an idea. So most of the times, memes are either comedic or they're derogatory. So there's pluses and minuses. If you use them in a way that will make people laugh, they're more likely to share them. Unfortunately, if you use them to be derogatory, they get shared just as fast. But for clubs, they are a very, very powerful way of having some light entertainment, maybe about a club personality or something along those lines, which has the capacity to be shared around very, very quickly.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe. Now, tip number 5, use photos in all media releases. So one of the big complaints we hear, Joe, is that local clubs just struggle to get into the local media. And we say, do you issue a media release? Most of the time the answer is no, so there's the first problem. But the second problem is, yeah, we issue a media release, but we still don't get in there. Do you link a photo to your media release and do you have a quote with it? Oh, no, not really. We thought they'd send a photographer out. So in your media releases, if you can have a great photo and a quote that relates to the photo and the story, you're much better chance of getting that story in to the local newspaper.
Spot on.
So every week, we strongly recommend to clubs create a resource that all they do is to create a media release with a photo and a quote and a key contact for the club, so that much more probability of getting that photo in the local newspaper, in the local TV or the local radio station, as the case may be.
Tip number 6, club newsletter.
Club newsletter, Joe. Every club, we preach this week in, week out, every club should be using an email newsletter, and nothing makes an email newsletter look better or is going to be shared around more than having photos of you know, the players and the volunteers and
it's,
the people related
it's
to
so
club.
True. I mean, you put yourself in that position, you get faced with a newsletter that is just bulky and full of written content, and the likelihood is that you're not going to read it too much. But you get a newsletter that has plenty of colour, lots of images, and it's going to be read. And
particularly if it's the relating to the people that you know,
absolutely.
You love, or you follow.
Absolutely.
Tip number 7 and tip number 8, Joe. Photos are fantastic now for fundraising, and also now with today's day and age and technology and the internet and on-demand printing, is what we can do today with photos from a fundraising perspective is significantly better than what we could do even 4 or 5 years ago, Joe. So tip number 7 from a fundraising perspective is create yearbooks, photo yearbooks for each team. And now you can create a yearbook very, very easily using online software. And again, we've got a couple of Memento is one that we have on the Sports Community website who produce yearbooks and has the software on their website. You can just produce one book, pay a couple of dollars to produce one book, take it to your club and say, how many people want to order this book? And the beautiful thing about photo yearbooks, if you've got a photo of every single player doing what they do, and particularly if it's a junior club, Joe, for that auntie and uncle that's got everything and the grandparents that have got everything, all of a sudden this becomes a fantastic Christmas present or fantastic birthday present. You know, here's little Johnny. So yearbooks, A, are fantastic for fundraising, and B, they're also fantastic for capturing the history of your club. Tip number 8, which is, again, another fundraising idea, which I just love, again, particularly for junior clubs, is you can create playing cards, like our old Scanlan's footy cards that we used to trade
yeah,
in the
great.
Schoolyard.
Fantastic.
Shows our age a little bit, but we'll push on, Joe. You know, we can create those for all our junior kids now. So instead of trading their AFL heroes or their A-League heroes or their netball heroes, then they can be trading themselves with their friends and family. And again, it becomes a very cheap, easy fundraising idea that parents and families are not going to just buy one pack of cards. They're going to give them to grandma and grandpa and auntie and uncle. 10, 15 packs of cards can go with any one family. So
Great, great fundraising idea.
Tip number 9, the history.
Number 9, the last one. The thing that photos do more than anything else is they tell a story. So the historic photos, Joe, if we're saving the photos and collecting the photos from our past, then it tells another story of another time, which is really interesting to our members.
And powerful, because it talks about a club legacy, which talks to club culture, which talks to a club that's been successful because it's been around a long time. So very, very powerful way to have or display your club's history.
Yeah, so Joe, in a nutshell, what we're trying to get to is clubs that have got photos from every year that they've been around, and that's a fantastic thing. So the humble photo, Joe, is an incredibly powerful asset for your club, and good luck to clubs as they try to take advantage of it.
Okay, we're rapidly coming to that time again, the end of the show. It's been a pleasure hosting the radio show for you out there this week. We hope that you've enjoyed it. So on behalf of myself, Joe Novella,
and myself, Steve Pellis, thank you for having us part of your sports community.